tuned in to the Community Cats Podcast. Ready? Let's go. Hey, everyone. It's Kristen, the podcast's technical tabby. I'm just popping in for a moment to let you know that this week's show is part two of a special audio presentation of the webinar Targeted TNR, Getting the Most Bang for Your Buck. If you haven't listened to part one yet, it happened last week, so maybe go back and listen to that one before you start this one. This was a presentation that was given by our fantastic partner in TNR, Brian Cordes, who's the National Programs Director of Neighborhood Cats. In this part two episode, Brian takes us through the complexities of maintaining and expanding a targeted TNR program once it's off the ground. So he's going to chat about challenges like community resistance, limited resources, and the struggle to keep momentum going once you're kind of done with that initial push. Brian also shares some firsthand experiences, and those will help illustrate some of the practical advice he's given. And it will help you set some realistic goals and timelines so you can sustain your efforts over the long term and hopefully avoid frustration and burnout. You may hear Brian refer to handouts or slides occasionally. That's because this was originally given as a visual presentation. We tried to take out most of those references whenever possible, but if something didn't make sense without it, we left it in. So we hope you're not confused by that, but if you want to watch the presentation in full with all the cool visuals and slides that Brian has, you can find that along with a lot of other helpful webinars in our Everything TNR playlist on YouTube. You can just go to communitycatspodcast.com/TNR-playlist and it'll take you right to it. For more info on Neighborhood Cats, visit their website, neighborhoodcats.org. And if you need more information on any of the TNR trainings that we offer, you can go ahead and go to communitycatspodcast.com and search for the Community Cat Care Training and Education page. That's under Virtual Education if you're looking at the navigation on the site. Thanks again for listening and for everything you do to help cats. Next week, we'll be back with a regular show. And as regular host Stacey LeBaron always says, don't forget to turn your passion for cats into action. Now, on with the episode.
So the first part of today, we talked about the, you know, what targeting it is and why it's effective and why it's a good strategy. So for the second half today, we're going to talk about how do you do it? What are the mechanics of targeting? You may have noticed in our Farrellville hypothetical so far, we've had pretty much an even number, even distribution of cats among zip codes. So for purposes of the hypothetical, they all had like 25 cats in each zip code. Now, the reality, though, is communities have uneven distributions of free roaming cats. And remember, we're trying to work in areas of high need. And how do we do that? How do we identify where it's most impactful for us to be working with TNR? And there's a number of ways to do that. One of the ways, so like if you look at the hypothetical now, right? So zip code number 3 obviously has a higher concentration of free roaming cats. So if we wanted to make the most impact and we had enough resources to get a high sterilization level in zip code number 3, that's where we would want to go. Now, you can look at intake, like in the Humane Society of Tampa Bay example, they looked at intake into the county shelter and determined that where they wanted to go was the second highest. You don't always want to go to the first highest because there's usually reasons why it's the first highest. And if you're just starting out with targeting, you want to look at other things besides just the sheer number of cats. How close are they to your spay neuter facilities? Where are your trappers located? What's the transportation going to be like? But you can be guided by that data. I know there was a question asked about, well, how do I get that data from the shelter? So there's a couple of ways you can go. The first way is the cooperative way, which is don't only ask for that kind of breakdown of the data, you know, by zip code or in location, but go to them and explain what you want to do with it and get them involved in understanding the project that you want to undertake. And then I think they might be a lot more open to sharing. Also, if the shelter has any type of government contract, either they're a private shelter that is getting funding from the government or has an animal control contract or is a municipal shelter, you may be able to get that information through a Freedom of Information Act request. The cooperative way is usually the best. Now, you can also, if you don't have intake data to access or you can't get it, you can track complaint calls and requests for help to your own organization. So every time somebody calls you asking for help about an outdoor cat or complaining about an outdoor cat, you want to get their address. And in that way, you'll be able to start to build a map and look at where the areas of high need are. And then there's what I call just tribal knowledge. And people who've been working with free roaming cats in your community for some period of time, for a few years, they're going to just know where the problem areas are, even without any data. So you can use their knowledge and use that as supplementary to other data. But often, especially if you go to animal control officers who've been working in that community for some time, they'll just know right off the top of their head where the high need areas are. So this is an example of when I talked, once you get that data, you've been collecting addresses and you can map it. And this is just a simple Google map where you go in and you put a pin wherever there's an address. And this is a hypothetical in Brooklyn of addresses where, you know, free roaming cats or colonies of cats were located. And what you would do is after you've got this, you can decide where to target. So if you go where that red circle is, you can see that's a particularly high concentration for a relatively small area. And it looks like it's on the waterfront, probably by the docks. So that would be a good place to focus. And I also want to bring up one other thing that sometimes gets taken out of context, because remember, the webinar we're doing today on targeted TNR is part of a three-part series. And that three-part series goes over each aspect of a community TNR program. So targeting wouldn't be the only thing that we would recommend a community TNR program do. You would also want to have resources available to people who want to do it themselves, educational resources, maybe trap banks. You want to encourage TNR in the rest of the community while you're taking a good chunk of your resources and your expertise and doing the targeting, because the targeting has the most impact. Today is not meant to say it's all the only thing you should do. It should be a part of your strategy, maybe a big part of it, but not all of it. So you're sending your trappers and the surgeries you're paying for into this target area, but maybe you're doing workshops and trap banks and things like that for the rest of your community. Another hint for figuring out where the high need areas are is poverty. You know, we talked about very early on the high instance of crime and the correlation of low income poverty below the poverty line neighborhoods. Same thing is true with free roaming cats. As we learned from this study that was done in 2010 in Boston, there's a very strong correlation between cat intake and poverty and low income levels. And this study actually found a correlation between cat intake and premature human mortality. And that, to me, that ties directly into poverty, because, you know, you don't have the same level of health care or too far from the hospital or education, things like that. So poverty, poor areas are often correlated with high free roaming cat populations. So once you've identified your target area, in order to get a significant or what we call a substantial percentage of the cats in that area spayed and neutered, you have to have some idea how many there are, right? Because how are you supposed to get 50% or 70% of an entire zip code spayed and neutered if you don't know how many cats are there in the first place? So we don't need an exact number, but we need an idea. And this formula that I have developed, that I developed when I was working at PetSmart Charities, where I oversaw hundreds of these types of projects, I'm not going to be able to publish a scientific paper about this, although it is rooted in some science, as I'll explain. But basically what happened was when we were at PetSmart Charities and we had this problem of we want people to fix a large percentage of the cats, but how do they know how many there are? We were advised by one academic veterinarian to divide the human population by six based on some studies that she had done. What we found was when we did that, the groups kept running out of cats. They kept overestimating the number of cats. So they would estimate there were 2,000 cats, and then they would do 600 surgeries, and they couldn't find any more. And we would have to amend the grant and open up the target area to larger things, which is a high-quality problem. But in search of a more accurate tool, I went into the data that the divide by six was based on. And long story short, I just found a lot of double counting. I found cats that were eating at multiple locations being counted multiple times. So when you only counted cats who were fed daily at the same location, the formula was divide the human population by 15 instead of by 6. And that started to work a lot better. And we started to get a lot fewer projects having to be expanded. Now, understand that divide by 15 is an average across all projects across the country. What I found was there are more cats if the area is rural, if the climate is warm, and that's not because more kittens are born, it's because more kittens survive. Also, if there's been no prior TNR done in that area. So you might divide the human population by 2 or 9 or 10 if you're looking at those factors. On the other hand, there are fewer cats than divide by 15 if the area is very urban, so that there's a lot of people living vertically, and free roaming cat populations are correlated to ground space, not necessarily to the number of people. So the less ground space, the less cats. The climate's colder because fewer kittens survive. And if there's been a lot of prior TNR, then you're not going to have as many free roaming cats. So what I suggest you do is start by dividing your target area's human population by 15. Start to make some, you know, calculated adjustments based on these other factors, and then see if it makes sense. See if the number makes sense to you. Remember, you don't have to be exact. You're just trying to get in the ballpark. And if you follow this formula, what we found is that it does get you close enough to have some idea of what kind of resources you need to go into a specific area. So again, we've been talking about surgeries, how many surgeries, once you have an idea of how many cats. We recommend you aim for 50% or above of the estimated population. And the reason for that is we're not advocating settle for 50% sterilization levels. We're acknowledging that it's a guess. Your estimate of the number of cats is a guess. It could be a lot. If you're guessing there are 2,000, maybe there's only 1,300, right? But on the other hand, maybe there's 2,200 because you undercounted. Although we tend to see overestimates more than underestimates. If you aim for 50%, you're going to get pretty close, most likely. You're going to have an impact. You may have to do another round if you only get 50%, but you may aim for 50% and end up getting 70 or 80 is more the experience. Remember, proceed a colony at a time and get as close to 100% in each of those groups as you can. And that's the best way to go forward. But in terms of how many surgeries should you have, if you're estimating there's 1,000 cats, you want to be prepared to perform at least 500 surgeries. So what if you've identified zip code number 3 as your high need area? You've estimated there's about 50 cats there. So you need 25 surgeries in order to go in there and be confident you can have an impact, but you've only got 10, right? So should you still continue? Should you go into zip code 3 and do those 10 surgeries, you know, do a couple of colonies, 100%? We recommend no. We recommend that instead of going with too few surgeries into too big of an area, that you adjust your target area and go use those 10 somewhere where it's going to be a high percentage. So put aside zip code number 3, because you don't have the resources yet to do that. And go to zip code number 1, where your 10 surgeries are going to get you to like a 90% sterilization rate. And then build on that success and work your way up to zip code number 3. And then maybe after you've done 1, 2, and 4, you start to do a kind of east to west or west to east sweep through zip code number 3, going a colony at a time. But the main point is, however many surgeries you have, you can have an impact if you target properly, if you use your surgeries to get a high percentage of the cats in the area you're working fixed. You'll make more progress overall in Ferrellville if you're working zip code number 3 and you're getting most of them fixed, but you'll still make progress in zip code number 1. And that's what's most important. Now, I want to introduce the concept of micro-targeting, because this is another really, really interesting way to go. And this has been pioneered in Australia. We're looking at data that was generated by the RSPCA New South Wales and their Sydney shelter. And what they did was they mapped not just like zip codes, but they mapped exact locations where cats were seen. So they didn't just go into this neighborhood. They went to those exact addresses and trapped and spay-neutered and returned those particular cats. It was a kind of what we call micro-targeting. So here's the results before the micro-targeting from 2016 to 2000. The average intake from this particular neighborhood was 283 cats a year. That dropped by 31% in the first year of micro-targeting and 46% in the next. So it was a very effective strategy. Everywhere else in the RSPCA New South Wales service area, intake had been flat. This was the only factor that differentiated. Now, the thing that's most exciting about this approach is that in order to achieve those population declines, they only had to fix 8 cats per 1,000 people of the population in that area over the course of 2 years. Now, if you compare that to the other targeted projects we've looked at that were 2 years long, in Gainesville, they got an intake drop of 66%, but they had to fix 127 cats per 1,000 people. And in Tampa, where they got a 47% decline, they had to fix over 60 cats per 1,000 human population. In this target area, they only had to alter 8. So it's not definitive yet. We need to see more data. But this particular study suggests that if you're able to do that very precise micro-targeting, like exactly where the cats are located, and you focus on them and not the general area, it can be much more efficient in terms of getting results. So how do you get the word out when you're in a targeted area? There's different levels of communication. There's what we call general media, which is TV, radio, press, posting on your website, posting on your Facebook page. And we call it general because it doesn't just focus on your target area. It's going to be heard well beyond that. Once we recommend you start with that because it's usually fastest and cheapest. But then you're going to get your first wave and then you're going to run out of cats and people. Then you want to go to targeted media, which is media that is specific to your target area. So you saw like in the Humane Society of Tampa Bay example, they used yard signs, you can use billboards, you can pass out door hangers and flyers, postcard mailings, inserts into utility bills. So address specific types of outreach will get you another wave of people. In the end, though, for these targeted projects to be very successful, you need to have boots on the ground. You're going to get to that. You should definitely go through the first two forms of media, but you know that you will eventually need to be in the neighborhood and talking to people and communicating and answering questions and getting people to know you and to trust you. So door knocking, walking and talking, tabling, being present at community meetings, holding a vaccine or wellness clinics within that neighborhood will get you a lot of goodwill and a lot of information. Doing food and shelter giveaways, something that connects you with the neighborhood. And the woman you see in this slide here, we met her because we were slowly driving this one neighborhood where we heard there were a lot of cats and we saw a bunch of cats in her driveway. So we got out of the car and we talked to her. And sure enough, she was feeding 10 female cats and was the source of most of the overpopulation in the neighborhood. So we told her what we were doing and we talked to her about spay neuter and we offered our assistance. And, you know, a couple of weeks later, they were all fixed. So sooner or later, it's important to know, because sometimes groups think that I can do a targeted project and they're 6 months into it and all they've done is put up Facebook posts and they're wondering why nobody is calling or taking advantage of it. It's because usually, almost always, because they have not ventured outside the clinic or the shelter walls and gone into the neighborhood. And remember, these neighborhoods are often very challenged in terms of resources and income levels, and you need to make that extra effort to find as many cats as you can. So know your community, you know, what's the income level, what's the ethnicity, try to have people in the community who that community can relate to in terms of ethnicity, what language is spoken, so you have materials in the correct language. How do they feel about spay neuter? Is it a culture that is against this, or just not knowledgeable about it, or what are your challenges going to be? What your messaging going to be is going to depend a lot on what the culture is. Is it a business area? Is it a residential area? Who are the local influencers that you can reach out to and help spread your message? This is all good information to have before you go in. you want to, as you're working the neighborhood and you have boots on the ground, so these are the types of questions you want to be asking. Number one is who's feeding, because it's going to be hard to trap them if you don't know. You know, when, where do they feed? How many cats are there? Anything about the history of cats in the area and anything about what the general attitude is. Are they hostile? Are they protective? There's a little bit of both. Again, all these things will help you tailor your message and help you succeed with that all-important outreach. I would say, in general, my experience with outreach and targeted projects is often that the beginning can be very frustrating. The first month, when, you know, nobody's calling, or you just feel like you can't find the feeders, you can't find the cats. And then all of a sudden there's a breakthrough. Your face has become familiar enough. People begin to trust you. Somebody takes a chance in their eyes and they let you TNR their colony, and the cats come back and they're healthy. And then that caretaker tells the other feeders they know. And then all of a sudden the dam breaks open and you're flooded with information. And you are now, instead of wondering where are the cats, you're trying to figure out, how am I going to fix all these cats? So don't be surprised if that's your experience too.
Tomahawk Live Trap exceeds customers' expectations by providing them with the highest quality humane animal control products available. Check out their new Pro Series Gravity Door Trap. They feature a door that sets automatically when you open it. No hook or plate setting needed. Use discount code KEEPITHUMANE for 10% off your order at livetrap.com. Want an easy grant opportunity for your animal organization? Maddie's Fund is giving away a $3,000 grant each month to one lucky Maddie's Pet Forum member. You'll automatically be entered to win each month when you start a new discussion, reply to a new post, or upload a new library resource. Learn more at forum.maddiesfund.org today. Would you like to help pet parents and their beloved pets? Pet parents in the Ticonderoga, New York area need your help. The area has few resources, but the Keeping People and Pets Together Pet Food Pantry is trying to fill that void. They provide pet parents with food and supplies, as well as low-cost spay-neuter. They need donations and volunteers. To help, go to the Keeping People and Pets Together Pet Food Pantry on Facebook or email one at a time, 09@gmail.com.
One of the biggest in targeted projects that I've seen fail, I would say the number one reason is because the organization running the project thought that it would be enough to offer the community free spay neuters and some traps, and then the community would go and trap the cats and bring them in. That doesn't work. You should try that to get your first wave. But there's going to be people, look, all of you have been doing TNR for a while, you know this. You know, there are people who either are physically unable to do it, maybe from age or disability. There are people who don't have the time. There are people who just don't want to do it. They'd like to see the cats fixed, but they're just not willing to put any time or effort into getting them fixed, which is, of course, very frustrating. Now, if you're doing a grassroots program where you're not targeting and you're just working anywhere in your service area, you're probably going to gravitate away from those people and to the people who will support you and will help, which makes a lot of sense, it doesn't make sense when you're targeting, because it's not about the people. It's about getting a high percentage of cats fixed. So if you know there's a colony of cats, you can't afford to walk away from that group because the caretaker won't do anything. You have to fill that gap if you want your project to be successful. So don't rely on residents and caretakers. Try to involve them as much as you can, but you're going to have your own people in the field, and that's going to be your staff or experienced volunteers, or I've seen shelters partner with TNR groups who are experienced with this kind of on-the-ground work, and then get support from local rescuers and caretakers. Use them as volunteers who come along sometimes and things like that, but you will need to provide manpower. Tracking impact is real important. We want to not just be assuming we're having an impact. We want to know that, because it will guide us in our strategies and what we do. So you can track what I call direct outcomes. And that is, there's two kinds. That's taking a census. And so let's say you're working in a mobile home park and it's not a huge area. It's a few acres. So you're able to set up feeding stations and people will are able to take pictures and count the cats, and you get an actual number of cats at that mobile home park. Then after you do your intervention, your TNR, or in the middle of it, you do another count to see how things are going. So that's a direct outcome. You can also do direct outcomes. You don't have to have absolute numbers of cats. There are ways to count the direction of the cat population, but that gets pretty sophisticated into like DC cat count territory. So for larger areas, that kind of census is just impractical, right? How are you going to count all the cats in lower Manhattan, for example? You can't. So you need to rely on metrics like income intake from those areas, euthanasia, complaint calls, the things we were talking about before that led you to identify a high need area. And one idea I've seen groups do is online kitten postings. And do you see those going up or down and things like that? And so the graph here is an example of a targeted project in Cortez County where they tracked intake and euthanasia and plotted that on a graph against the rising number of free roaming cat spay neuters. And you can see the correlation as the surgeries went up, the intake and the euthanasia went down. Why is it important to do this? Well, first of all, we want to know if we're being successful. Even more important, though, is knowing whether what you're doing is working while you're doing it. So if you've been working in a target area for 6 months pretty intensely and the intake is still going up, then maybe you've underestimated the number of surgeries, right? On the other hand, what often happens in these targeted projects is you get about halfway through and you can't find any more cats. And you've done all this outreach and you have boots on the ground and you're just not finding them. And the question becomes, are we done here and we should move on to somewhere new? Or are we not reaching people and we need to figure out a new way to try to get to them? And the only way you can answer that is by looking at your data. If your data is going well, if you're seeing dropping intake, then that's a pretty good chance you overestimated the number of cats and you've already done a substantial number. And rather than waste time trying to find cats that aren't there, you should move next door to the next zip code. On the other hand, if intake's still going up or it's steady and you're not seeing any improvements, then you might need to redouble your outreach efforts. So that's why it's important to be tracking metrics. And what do you do if you run out of cats? Like I just said, high quality problem, take your surgeries and start on the next target area, move next door.
I just wanted to stress a little this point that you were bringing up at the end where it sounds like based on your experience working with organizations when you were with PetSmart Charities and other groups while you're at Neighborhood Cats, that there's a general trend that groups tend to overestimate the number of cats that need assistance.
Yeah, much more often than the other direction. That was more the error wasn't that the groups weren't having an impact because they weren't doing enough cats. It was that they were running out of cats. That was what was happening a lot more often. And like I say, in the beginning, we were advised by top people in the field to divide the human population by six. And that turned out to be really a gross overestimate. So in general, yeah, we tend to overestimate.
I've heard references for every owned cat, there's an unowned cat. And for every owned cat, there's two unowned cats. And you're taking it from those types of population statistics. And I'm with you in the targeted projects that I've worked on that when I go in and meet with the community members, usually that number is like way up here. And then I get it down to a certain level. But even in some of the projects I worked with you on in Lowell, Massachusetts, we even had to bring it down even farther. But then we got the discovery of the impact of working with the owned cats in the community on top of the TNR, which made it sustainably successful. And if folks are interested in the Lowell, Mass, it's a blog post on the United Spay Alliance's website. There's the whole story about how they went from drowning in kittens to kitten. What's a kitten? We don't see one anymore. And so it's a really good story. And thank you again, Brian, for supporting that project.
Oh, yeah, of course. Lowell was a real persistent effort that ended up paying off big time in the end. It wasn't easy in the beginning. But you bring up an excellent point. What do you do if you run out of cats? Maybe you just stay in that target area and you expand to pet cats who may end up outside eventually unfixed. So that's probably that. So you can either continue with free roaming cats in a new area or you can stay in that target area and start doing the pet cats, which I like a lot. Because in a lot of areas, you know, it's really very fluid and difficult to distinguish who's a pet and who's not. So if it's an unaltered cat and it might, and it is outside or it might get outside, you want that cat fixed.
Yeah. So it just, doing the owned cats, assisting them, it's an easier program. It's a lighter labor activity, I think, than the trap, neuter, return program. And so just referencing Newburyport, we ran out of cats, right? So we ran out of cats. We did not run out of owned cats that needed assistance with spay, neuter. And so that's why we started the Catmobile program, which was to get that next layer, because Farrellville, you have Farrellville as one layer, but there's no apartment buildings there, right? And then sometimes Adam and Eve come from the apartment buildings, right? So there's actually could be a vacuum effect, you know, from the owned architecture that's also in that community too, rather than the grocery store next door or whatever.
Yeah, I suspect that's the next layer of development. Our work, as we start to become more and more effective, is we stop distinguishing between types of cats. And we target an area and we come in and then, hey, as long as you're doing the pet cats and the free roaming cats, you probably should just do the pet dogs too, right? And you just go in full force. I think we had a spay neuter crisis in this country and it sort of halted the development of the strategic side of this. But I think you're right. I think the next layer is not a webinar on just how do you TNR, how do you do targeted TNR, but how do you do targeted spay neuter everybody in a
right.
particular area.
And then a second question on top of that in the whole targeting theme I have in my mind is how important it is that you actually do adoption events of spay or of neutered cats into those target areas so that then you're ensuring that community is getting sterilized cats. They're not having backyard breeders. They're not trying to populate from within. And then you have to have that low cost spay neuter resource. So that I also think is another layer of looking at. We believe that pet ownership is a right across the board. And let's think about how do we get neuter before adoption or neuter cats? Because people want kittens. They're going to resupply. So how do we control that resupply back into the community too? Which is another layer of this magical mosaic of cat welfare.
Yeah. Well, you guys in Massachusetts, again, high quality problem. You know, what do you do if you don't have enough kittens? We'd all like to experience that.
I know. We have a question here about how to approach your local shelter to get data, such as a heat map about areas of high need in your community. The requests to date to the shelter have not been well received. So maybe is there information, is there a way to get that information outside of that shelter? Or does everybody have to report it on their statistics or is it not required and we're just at the mercy of the leadership?
You're largely at the mercy of the leadership. I mean, if it's a government connected, if they have a government animal control contract or is a municipal shelter, there's a certain amount of information you can get with the Freedom of Information Act request, but it's always better do it if you can. It's going to be a lot less costly and happen a lot faster. And I was saying earlier, the first thing I would try to do is have a meeting with the officials at the shelter to explain to them why I want the information and what I'm going to do with it. Because maybe they don't know you and they're reluctant to start handing you information they may consider confidential, which is people's addresses and things like that. So the more you can educate them about what you're going to do and how it's going to benefit them, right? By having fewer cats coming into their shelter, the more likely you are to get cooperation. So if you're just asking for it in a void and they have no idea what you want it for, that's probably going to be a no. But if they understand and they trust you and you've worked with them, then it's probably going to be a yes.
Right. And I think what shelter animals counts now, they go on county level. I've heard you can't look at organization by organization anymore in terms of the statistics.
That I'm not sure of. But again, it's a matter of relationships and trust. So Humane Society of Tampa Bay, the county shelter was happy to share their intake by zip code data with them. So it may be hard when it comes to micro-targeting if you're not the organization that holds that address information, because that, again, can get into, we consider that confidential. But something like a heat map that doesn't specify specific addresses or broken down by zip code or neighborhood where it's a little more general, I don't think shelters will have a problem with that if they trust you as a partner.
Before we head out, Brian, can you talk a little bit about cat stats?
Sure. It's an online tool for tracking and mapping colonies in your area and storing caretaker information. So basically, It's designed for caretakers to enter their information. You can do it as a program, but the idea is to spread the labor. Like in New York City, a colony caretaker will go to the CatStats website, an account, which takes about 2 minutes, and then they can add their colony. They can put their contact information, the address of the colony, how many cats there are, how many are fixed, and then the system automatically maps all of that. And you as an administrator are the one who gets to see the maps and the collection of data. Individuals only see their own data, and it can be really life-saving. We just had a cat came into the local shelter in Staten Island and literally wandered in, and they were like, whose cat is this? And we were able to go into our CatStats system for New York City and find the colonies that were within a block of the shelter, notify the caretakers, and they were able to reclaim their cat. So that tool is available. It's only $50, and you can go to catstats.org to register if you want one. It's for government agencies, nonprofits, TNR groups, not for individuals, but check that out if that's something you're interested in.
Right. In your opinion, and we'll have this be the last question, in your opinion, or do you have an opinion of what states have the best control of the stray cat population?
Historically, New England and the Northwest. So, Washington, Oregon, Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire, Connecticut. Well, less so in Connecticut. I would say Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Vermont, and then Oregon, Washington. Those are the ones that have had kitten shortages at times over the past several years. So they're taking cats. If you're transporting cats in, you're doing pretty well with spay neuter.
And I think that there are some pockets. I think in Florida, as long as they're doing a lot of internal movement of cats, there's some pockets. You worked in Tampa. Jacksonville has a reputation of being pretty strong with community cats. And so I think parts of Northern Florida, Southern Florida has some issues, but I think they're trying to do some internal transport around the state. And Western Massachusetts has had an uptick of cat issues, but Eastern Massachusetts has stayed level or even reduced more. So the conversation of what does maintenance mode mean and how do we support our Western partners in Massachusetts? And so there are, if you're not on top of it or you lose significant access to spay neuter, you're going to slide backward pretty easily.
Yeah, we tend to work in areas that are in crisis. So I haven't had that experience yet.
Yeah. Well, in 2019 in Springfield, a kitten on Craigslist was selling for like $500, not vetted, not anything. Now they're posted all for free.
Yeah. Well, that also points to how Craigslist can be used as a metric to assess what's going on. But yeah, since the pandemic, just spay neuter capacity everywhere took a big hit. And it looks like it's starting to slowly come back. Like in New York City, we still have enormous issues we're able to get cats fixed, but not at the scale that we were before. And then there are areas like where we are now on Maui, where there's a lot more capacity than there used to be and a lot's happening. But we started with such an enormous cat overpopulation that's going to take some time to work its way through. So every area is a little bit different, but I would go back to that idea of our resources are outstripped by the need for them. So if we want to make the most of what we have, we do need to be strategic about what we do and not just settle for first come, first serve.
Agreed. And we're all going to be watching very closely the campaign in California to allow technicians to neuter cats and rabies vaccines. Those can be done by technicians, right? And in many states, rabies vaccines have to be given by a veterinarian. And so taking those two activities off the plate of veterinarians and adding them to a certified veterinary technician's plate, I think that would be a game changer, almost.
I agree. Yeah, absolutely.
Hopefully that will become a trend.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.